The unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch means it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story? The coolest place on your dial because it's the only program originating in Houston that is devoted entirely to storytelling. Right here on listener-sponsored, award-winning KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston Downtown, with Roxy Russell, working the boards, and stepping in just a bit. I want to voice my deepest thanks, first of all, to those of you who donated so generously during our spring drive. Your commitment to the power of story will continue to fuel the collection of tellers who take us on profound and fanciful journeys every week with their astonishing stories. From heart-rending personal narratives to enchanting folk tales, and then they return us safely to the present at around 10:30. You know, last Sunday I had the good fortune to see the Houston premiere of An American Mirror at the Museum of Fine Arts. It's a film that explores the life and works of New York street photographer Martin Elcourt, and it also happened to be the documentary debut of his daughter, Houston-based filmmaker Stephanie Twyford. Stephanie is president and founder of Legacy Multimedia, whose mission is to help families, individuals, and organizations share life stories, connect generations, and preserve legacies in timeless, high-quality multimedia presentations. An intensely successful woman, Stephanie mounted more than a dozen years of experience designing award-winning video biographies and personal tributes before turning the lens to her father and, earlier this year, completed the aforementioned film Martin Elcourt, An American Mirror, an intimate visit with her father to which viewers are invited as he shares stories about the history of American photography and, with tender nostalgia, shares thoughts and feelings about his pictures and the stories that surround them. Growing up in New York during the Depression did not dissuade Martin from seeing light in the faces of those who lived in times of hardship. Quite the contrary. He saw faces driven by hope. The kind of hope that flowed through the souls of concentration camp survivors, or that molded the kinship that unified Harlem. Because to Martin Elcourt, the people of New York painted the portrait of America, the very bright and very beautiful, told in stunningly romantic black and white. And tonight, we embrace the best kind of storytelling world, a prolific storyteller telling a story about the storyteller she loves deeply, her father. Stephanie, how are we doing so far?
Thank you for having me here.
Are you kidding? This is magnificent. I know you're there. You're kind of tense, right? A little bit tense.
Taking
right?
a deep breath.
You're a little bit nervous. You have nothing to be nervous about. And besides, we all have to be a little bit nervous or else we wouldn't care.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
And you're a magnificent storyteller. You really are. And
thank you.
Although I haven't known you very long, I've really enjoyed this. And I hope our relationship continues. And I hope that we can do a lot of this. And this is really going to be fun. You know, I love that your dad focused on very positive, happy features because of seeing the film on Sunday, I really did sift through some of my old photographs, all of which are black and white. They're vintage photographs of my grandparents in particular. And I reflected on some of the memories that are so frozen in time. And there's one in particular, just what I wanted to share with you. My grandfather was riddled with Parkinson's. And when he worked at a paint warehouse, of all places, for many years when he came to this country, he wanted me to help write his Christmas cards and send them to everybody every year. And we have a picture of me at the ripe old age of 8 sitting at the dining room writing thoughts for my grandfather. And I could just see him shaking. But he was smiling at me while I was writing this. Now, I didn't know that he was so happy about the fact that I sat there and doing that. But it was a moment in time. It was something that I thought about. And I think that those are the kinds of stories, in my judgment at least, that your father captured best. Were your parents always happy and optimistic?
You know, like any couple, they went through their ups and downs. I think that that is one thing that they shared in common together. My mom was probably one of my dad's biggest cheerleaders and really served that role as a muse and encourager. And, you know, he's always been an optimist, and that's something that shows in his work. It shows in the stories that he tells. And I've never really The times that I've seen him stressed or going through anything negative, he always usually talks himself out of it.
Yeah, your dad appears to be the kind of person who, with camera in hand, would look at somebody sad and say, smile and maybe I'll take your picture. In the meantime, I'm going to find somebody who's happier.
Yeah. I think actually he was trying to be more anonymous as opposed to getting them
but
to
he
laugh.
Just loved happiness. I really mean that.
He did.
And that makes you smile
yeah.
when you see these pictures of people in hardship. And I really do relate to that because I lived in an area in Cleveland, Ohio, where many people were just like that, despite the fact that it wasn't the east side of New York, it wasn't the Lower East Side. It was the same kind of audience, and people were happy. They were just happy being there. They were just happy. And your dad also appears to be so youthful. A lot of his photographs...
Well, and I wanted to point out a couple of points. First of all, he was born in 1929, which was the, you know, ushering in the Great Depression. So he had that to look forward to. And then he also suffered polio when he was 15. Yeah. So he had these very negative, very transformative experiences. And I think, you know, you've got to come out of those things right. with a positive outlook or, you know, you might end up...
Polio impacted him, how would you say?
I think it... caused him to try even harder to compensate for the physical deformities that he suffered. And a funny story about him, he had been weightlifting, doing a Charles Atlas course for several months before he was stricken with polio. And so he was actually very muscular, and the doctors claim that if he hadn't have had that muscle, he very well could have died because it really chewed through a lot of that.
Wow. I don't know. That doesn't surprise me at all. Someone like that who experienced that kind of a paralyzing effect, that kind of disability, would probably reach deep down inside into his soul and get as much strength as humanly possible and emerge as something that nobody ever imagined. I can imagine that, and I can see that. And I think a lot of that has to do with his generation, but he... What an artist.
Thank you.
Now, I know you've got a bundle of stories that characterize your father's style and persona. Tell us one of them.
Well, the one I wanted to share with you tonight, which every time I hear it just sends me into giggles, was it happened in about 1949, so he was 20 years old at the time. And as you know, as a young photographer, he did some wedding photography. So he was invited to cover a wedding at the Waldorf Astoria. And he was shooting with his best friend, Victor Pizzatola. And they decided they were going to this party, let's bring our girlfriends along. So at the time, my dad had an old Essex. And you have to understand, an Essex looked like a Model T. It was a very kind of VW of its generation. And they were produced from 1918 to about 1922. So at the time, that car was 25 years old. The doors were rusted shut, and it had no headlights. And instead of headlights, what my dad had done is he'd wired flashlights to the front of the car. And so when he drove, he turned the flashlights on and then turned them off when the car wasn't moving anymore. So they pour their girlfriends in their gowns into the open windows. There was no windows, you know, no glass windows in this car. And they drive up and pull up in front of the Waldorf Astoria. And the doorman comes out with his little epaulets and his hat on, and he says, "Can I help you, sir?" He says, "Yes, we're here to shoot the wedding tonight. And could you please help the girls get out of the car?" So here's the doorman with these, you know, 20-year-old women in ball gowns climbing out of the car window, and they're passing out the equipment for the photography shoot to the doorman, and he's putting everything on the curb. And finally, my dad says to the doorman, "Here's the keys. You'll have to climb into the window. And do me a favor. When you park the car, make sure to turn the flashlights off." And the visual of that, I love it.
When did he tell you that story?
He's told it to me several times.
Why do you suppose that story?
I think that to him, it's just very funny that dichotomy of the upper New York crust right. meeting this right. guy and this old jalopy that's rusted shut, and you know, just the preposterousness of that.
You are listening to So What's Your Story with video biographer and filmmaker Stephanie Twyford, president of Legacy Multimedia on listener sponsor KPFT 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. This is Hank Rubichek with Roxy Russell. I can't pronounce your last name. She's only my niece.
She's a Ruffle.
And besides, I think I had too much vodka. I don't know. Roxy, you know, stay away from me. Okay. Stephanie, you know, to support his family, your father left photography, as so many of them did, as a vocation, and boxed up his photos. Now, this is a wild story. This really is incredible. And you, Roxy, and I were talking about this earlier. And you didn't discover them until years later. You didn't even know that he was a well-known photographer until he was...
He was turning 70.
70 years old.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. And you, your brother, and your sister bought him a camera.
I bought him a digital camera for his birthday.
How do you respond to that?
You know, at first we weren't quite sure. He had been shooting family pictures with an older Minolta, and I think his polio was starting to give him some post-polio problems. And he wasn't able to hold his camera up. So we bought him a very lightweight, it was a Fuji camera. Mm-hmm. And boy, did that just open the floodgates for him. What happened was that he started shooting again, and then he unboxed his negatives and started scanning them and kind of came into a world where there was a lot of interest already for people that had been in the photo league.
Yeah, his interest really was rekindled. What was your response when you saw those photos in those boxes?
Oh my gosh, I was so excited. I remember I really didn't become too aware of what was happening until they staged a show at the Alpert Jewish Community Center in Long Beach. And I remember coming into that room and seeing all of these photographs hung on the wall and just being kind of confronted with the sheer enormity of what was going on.
That's amazing. Roxy, you had made a good point when we talked earlier. You said that something like that is very typical of that generation.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, you don't get too much of people looking, you know, did your dad did.
Check
like,
your dad out.
Yeah, check your dad. You know, like, I feel like that's kind of... I feel like someone with, you know, how popular someone really is, as long as they don't brag about it, you're not like, listen to this movie that I did or all this stuff.
No, but it was a great insight on your part. It really was, because now we live in a world where everybody has to be rewarded. I'm breathing. Mm-hmm. Well, good for you.
Yes. And we're doing all these selfies now.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yes. You know,
can you imagine my dad doing a selfie?
Yeah. when I think about your father and I think about him not disclosing, not bragging, for lack of another word. Death of a Salesman, always one of my favorite plays. Bernard, Willie Loman's nephew, is sees Willie in Charlie's shop, his brother-in-law's shop, and said, "Uncle Willie, how you doing? I can't talk to you right now. I got to go to work." And Charlie comes out and says proudly, "That's my son. He's going to argue a case in front of the Supreme Court." And Willie Loman says, "The Supreme Court? He didn't tell me that." And, of course, Charlie responds by saying he doesn't have to. He's going to do it.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. How about another story about your dad? I know you've got a bunch of them.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
We could be here for a few weeks.
Uh-huh.
So, as you remember in the movie, when I was in junior high, we moved up to Fairbanks, Alaska. My dad came home one day and announced that he had taken a job running Alaskaland, which was an amusement park focused on the Gold Rush theme. So one of the people that he worked with up in Fairbanks was a clown whose name was Hippie, and that was his last name was Hip, and so they called him Hippie for short. And, you know, he used to walk around Alaskaland. He kind of, his job was to run people up and down in a hot air balloon, and he chased a wild pig, and he had a shotgun, and if they needed to get more people over to the ice cream stand.
Yeah, your dad was professionally ambidextrous.
Yeah,
he did
a
lot of things.
After a while, Hippie, after he left Alaskaland, he moved down to Florida and became a clown with the Ringling Brothers Circus. And in 1974, my family and I were attending the Ringling Brothers Circus at Madison Square Gardens in New York City. And we're sitting in our seats, and all of a sudden this clown on stilts comes walking out, and my dad yells, "Look, there's Hippie!" So the circus hadn't started yet, so Dad ran down, and you could hear him going, "Hippie, Hippie," and Hippie walks over on the stilts and leans over, and the two of them are conversing for a couple of minutes, and then Hippie walks off, and Dad comes back up to the seats, and he says, "We're getting together with Hippie after the circus, and we're going to have dinner." So after the circus was all over, we went down to the ring, and Hippie came and picked us up and took us on a tour through the circus boxcars. And I tell you, it was, I don't know if you ever saw the HBO special Carnival. It was kind of like a David Lynch movie, you know, the bearded lady and the you know, the jugglers and all that stuff were all taking their makeup off, and we got to meet everyone. And then afterwards, we went out to dinner with Hippie and the two circus midgets. And they were still, they hadn't fully redressed. The circuit midgets were in their little circus outfits, and Hippie was in his clown outfit with his little bow tie on. So we went up the street to a typical New York restaurant. It was a little taverna, and it was very small. And we walked in, and we said, you know, there's seven of us for dinner. And the maitre d' looks over at the two midgets and the clown and says, I'm sorry, but the gentlemen will have to wear dinner jackets. And my dad, having been through this circus before, said to the waiter, to the maitre d', do you have any jackets in the back? And the waiter says, let me check. And so he comes out with three jackets. And of course, here's these two midgets with full men's jackets on. And we all go and we sit down, and the waitress comes up and she says, can I take your order? And one of the midgets turns to her and he says, yes, my friend and I would like a martini and the child's plate.
That's wonderful. All right. That's great. Now, that's a different kind of story than the Waldorf story, obviously. But it's a different message about your dad. What's the message about your dad in this story?
Well, he's so eclectic, and he knows people from so many different walks of life. Yeah. I mean, to me, that was one of those moments where, as a young adult, being highly aware that, okay, my folks aren't sitting home watching All in the Family. We're out having dinner with circus staff and doing very unusual things. And just the fact that we moved to Alaska was rather bizarre in the first place. That was in 1969. Yeah. And back then, I mean, you could barely buy a head of lettuce back in Alaska.
Of course, you know, we want everybody to know that you went from Los Angeles to California.
Yeah, I grew up in Southern California.
A little bit of a climate shift.
Yeah, I remember walking into school and saying to my friends, we're moving to Fairbanks, Alaska. And everybody's like, yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. Sure you are.
Yeah. But you did.
Yeah.
But you managed, right?
It was fun.
You managed. Yeah,
it was fun.
Everything could be fun.
It was an adventure. And that's what we did. We did a lot of adventures. Yeah. My dad was a very adventurous guy. My mom wasn't quite up for some of them. You know, a lot of times we were camping and she was sleeping in the car, or she would stay home. It's a little too weird for her.
This is Hank Rubicek and Roxy Russell, and you are enjoying guest storyteller Stephanie Twyford, founder of Legacy Multimedia. And so what's your story on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston? Or maybe kpft.org if you are listening online. But whether you're online, in line, out of line, or even in a lineup, we're really glad that you're here joining us. And that's what you get from drinking that energy stuff, I'm telling you, right? I'm a mess. I don't know. I'm a mess. Okay. In the meantime, Roxy, little selfies, right?
Yes.
Little safety selfies.
Yes.
What is that all about? Why do people do that?
I just think selfies are kind of like a quick way to take a picture.
Well,
you know,
obviously, but come on.
Well, I mean, I just think, you know,
take a picture of myself.
It's sometimes.
Let's call it a selfie.
Sometimes they're not as abrasive as going up to people and asking them, you know, can you take a picture of us? And then sometimes, you know, if you're standing there by yourself, you don't want to go up to one person and be like, hey, can you take a picture of me in front of this, you know, awkward building, or, you know, whatever you want to do. But, you know.
What kind of photographs do you enjoy?
I really enjoy, I enjoy, like, candid photos. Mm-hmm. And the most are the ones that I have in my personal collection, because I feel like they tell the most story. Like, I have this picture of me and my family. We're at a friend's wedding, and my mom's eyes are completely closed, but she's got this big smile on, and me and my dad and my sister are just looking great, and it's just a great little, like, snapshot, because my mom's always the perfect one in the picture, and then me and my sister and my dad are just, like, always trying to catch up.
Yeah.
But it's great. I love candid photos. They're my favorite.
The whole natural emergence of who we are and what we're all about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really bothers me, and I have a very good friend, Tom Kilty, I'll give him a plug here, who's a wonderful photographer, and he tells me that what really bothers him, and this bothers me too, is when people say, you know, we don't really need a photographer at our wedding. We'll go ahead and take pictures of ourselves. You know what I mean?
No.
And he gets to the point where he says, well, then just go ahead and do it. You know, for God's sakes. Why don't you just say you're cheap and you just don't want to pay for it? Because photography is art.
Yes,
you
and
need
I would.
An eye, you need a heart, you need instinct, you need a skill set, for God's sake.
Yeah, and I want my most memorable day to be, you know, immortalized. I mean, I can get a million people to take horrible pictures of me, but on my way. Yeah.
Now, here's a perfect picture, the Houston Storytellers.
The Houston Storytellers Guild is the best place to learn to tell stories. Monthly swaps are held the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the St. Andrew's House, located at 1811 Heights Boulevard. And check out the Houston Storytellers Guild's site at www.houstonstorytellers.org for all the fun happenings. And be sure to visit So What's Your Stories on our Facebook page for our features about storytelling and our weekly guests, and like us when you leave.
Yeah, like us a lot when you get out of there, would you please? Yeah. And do like us a lot. Listen, starting in July, and I'll be making this announcement next week, and I mean next week, and also it'll be on our site. But starting in July, the Houston Storytellers Guild will be meeting at the Multi-Service Center on West Gray, and that's where people vote, but our Tuesdays won't be the voting days, I promise you. More on our website and further details next month, which, by the way, is going to spotlight internationally renowned storyteller and author Elizabeth Ellis, another very special person to grace our studio, just like Stephanie is tonight. You know, French journalistic French photographer Elliot Erwitt asserted that the whole point of taking pictures is so you don't have to explain things in words. But another fascinating thing about your dad, and you know what I'm going to say, is that your dad was equally masterful at expressing himself in words. When were the times, if there were any times, when your dad preferred the written word over the visual one?
Well, he was actually a very prolific writer. He wrote several books, which several of them have been published. One of them, which I really liked, it was the story of a bear in Alaska, the life story of a bear. Never made it into print, but, you know, he still has the script for it.
Yeah.
But and he wrote a lot of articles about photography. He wrote for Rangefinder and Black and White magazine for many years.
You were raised in a really rich storytelling home.
Yeah.
Your mom tells stories too?
My mom tells stories in a very different way. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I asked that question because I was raised in a storytelling home.
Yeah.
My grandmother didn't say anything unless it was in storytelling form.
Yeah.
If you asked her what's for dinner, she'd say, "Let me tell you about the little boy at the carnival." And we're thinking, what does that have to do with what we're having for dinner? And you had to wait for 20 minutes to figure it out.
Get the punchline.
Yeah, and the beautiful thing about a story, though, is that you have to sit there and listen to it. And I think that storytelling teaches so many things, but whether you're looking at a photograph, or whether you're listening to a story, or whether you're engaged in rich conversation, you have to listen well.
Yeah.
And, you know, listening is being able to really heighten your senses and be able to interpret things that other people perhaps can't. And I think that's what people do when they see your father's photographs more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you've obviously sifted through many, many photographs of your dad's. Is there one that comes to mind as your favorite?
There's one that I really like. It was actually in the movie. I don't know if you remember it. It's called The Blind Musician, and it's a blind man playing a dobro, and in the foreground there are two small children, and they're in what looks to be a school uniform. They're in, like, little bloomer shorts and, you know, little anklet socks and shoes, and they each have, I think they're little trumpets that they're holding on to, and they're just amazed watching this man play the dobro.
Yeah.
And it's, I love that picture.
Yeah, I do remember that photograph, and I'm asking you that on purpose because I a lot of the photographs that I saw in the movie made an indelible impression on me, and the one that made the greatest impression was the one with the elderly man taking a nap.
A parable
and,
of life.
Right, and a middle-aged woman walking away and a child expressing a natural innocence. And the way your dad explained it is that these are three different modes of life, you know, simplistically stated. And what really was impressive was the block of ice mm-hmm. that he had in that photograph, which was melting.
Right.
You could see that it was melting. And I remember someone telling me that a photograph is to participate in another person's vulnerability, slicing into the moment and freezing it. Mm. So I'm thinking about those words and those images when I was seeing that photograph. All the photographs testify to time's relentless melt.
That's interesting because literally this past week, you're probably the third or fourth person that's mentioned that photo.
Yeah, it's a magnificent one. And when you think about it, I mean, after all, after a photo was taken, life moves on. It evolves.
Right.
That doesn't sound very profound, but when you think about it, it really is, because capturing a moment can't be done any other way. While we're speaking right now, when I say a word, you have to process it, and by the time you do, I'm onto something else.
Right.
But that doesn't happen in a photograph. It really does allow time to stand still. In any event, that's what I think your father does so incredibly well. Martin Elcourt's photos are displayed at the Catherine Couturier Gallery at 2635 Colquitt from May 3rd to the 31st. And as soon as we have another venue for the showing of the film, Stephanie is going to let me know, and I'm going to let all of you know. But you're pretty optimistic, right?
I'm very optimistic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's a lot of interest in
Tell us about your website. Tell us about where we can contact you and about some of the services that people might be interested in.
Sure. Well, basically my business is focused on two filmmaking veins. One is tribute videos for special events. Mm-hmm. So when you go to a gala and somebody's being honored for philanthropy or leadership and you watch that little 10-minute film, I do a lot of those. And then the other thing that I do that I really is my, you know, my meat and potatoes is family histories, family and business histories. I love helping a family tell its story in a way that will survive them on to future generations, and people will understand who their relatives were.
It is a form of immortality.
It is, and I do a lot of public speaking, and one of the things I say to people is if I came up to you on the street and said I had a video of your grandfather, great-grandfather, talking about his life, what would that be worth to you? And people get it. They just say, wow, that would be powerful.
It really would be.
Yeah.
And if you ask them, what would he say, they would probably not have an idea.
No, but a lot of people, you know, life, you know, what you talked about, the small moments, life is kind of a sequence of small moments. We wash the same clothes every week. We shop for the same groceries. We carpool. We do a lot of the same things. And those little moments are broken up by magnificence and, you know, really epic adventures and things.
Yeah.
And telling those stories and pulling that all together and allowing you to kind of see the scope of everything you've accomplished, it's a very powerful experience.
Like every good story, a snapshot keeps a moment from escaping. Thank you, Stephanie Twyford, for your artistic vision and profound insights, and especially for open expression of life for your father. Your success with Legacy Multimedia makes it possible for us to become immortalized through the power of story. Stay with us because Scooter, I saw him scooting around out there, is next with The Inner Side, another worthy weekly habit to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day and make it a habit to tune in every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story and ease into the weekend right. Keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Dr. Hank reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.